Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, networkers all across this great and many other great nations, I hope you're flying safe. It is I, Adam Juhan, back again with you, another TPN podcast. And today I am very excited to be joined by one of our new shameless plug partner sponsors and recruiting through us a little bit here and there, checking out what we have to offer as a network, Jetlinks Aviation and Ari Sarmento. Ari and I have kind of a history, and a good one at that, not a bad one, like some other people that I have enemies out there. You know who you are. I tease. Ari has a pretty awesome aviation background, and he started off as a 121 guy at American Airlines. This is after, obviously, he got their training and all that stuff. In Dallas, he took an early retirement and went into the 135 operations world. Ari is currently the chief pilot at Jetlinks and on the G650ER and the Hawker 800. He's got 12 other type ratings. He's a CFI, CFII, MEI, AGI, MEII. So basically, he knows and does it all. He worked for Flightworks in Atlanta and EFI out of Long Island, New York. He spent several years in Afghanistan. That's how I know Ari. And he worked on several military contracts for the U.S. government. Ari, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Adam. Thank you for having me.
So for those who, Ari right now is in Omaha. He's in their training facility. So Ari, he showed me a little tour. For those of you who are listening to the podcast, you're not going to be able to see this. So you're going to have to go check us out on YouTube. And that's the Pilot Network YouTube channel. Go Google it. It'll be in the show notes. So Ari is showing us around their training facility. That is an amazing training center. How many folks did you say that can fit, Ari?
About 150.
Wow, 150. Sounds like a TPN event in Omaha is forthcoming. That is a beautiful facility. How long has that been around?
It's been around. We've been in this facility for about 6 years.
Oh, okay. Wow. So, okay. Yeah. It's not, it looks like it's about 6 days old. It looks so nice. No, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, we have Ari on today because Jetlinks did something that we thought was really cool. For those of you who know what TPNX is, which we're learning that surprisingly a lot of folks didn't know what TPNX was and when it was, that's our yearly meetup down in Orlando. Jetlinks was there talking to a bunch of our folks and getting to know what the network was all about. Ari and Dee, two of the great people over at Jetlinks, decided they would come down and see what we're all about. So I think we're going to start off right there. What was the impetus that made you guys go, you know what, we want to show up to TPNX and see what the Pilot Network's all about?
Well, we've realized that we have a shortage of pilots. And so we've received a directive from our CEO, Jamie Walker, to reach out to different organizations that can get us in contact with potential employees that we want to recruit. So it's twofold. It's get out there and explain who we are and what we do and what kind of company we are and how we differ from other charter operators, and sort of explain to people that you could start your career with us on a beach jet, you can progress to a midsize Hawker or a Challenger, or a Gulfstream 4, 450, 550, and now the 650. So we really have a large group of aircraft. We have over 100 aircraft. We have over 280 pilots currently, and we have probably about 30 open positions that we're looking to fill. Wow. Across the U.S. So making that relationship and being present for the TPN event was, I believe, a very good investment in getting recognition out there and then partnering up to say, okay, we have an immediate need, but we also have a long-term need and want to solidify some long-term relationships that we can provide people the information they need to make a decision where they'd like to go.
Well, yeah, just all that you said right there, I'm already jotting down a bunch of notes to roll in other stuff. So we're not going to abandon the outline, but we've already got a shift here. So I guess the first thing I wanted to ask is, you said that you were looking into other avenues to find out these different organizations that you could go and chat with and get to know their membership and almost recruit from them. How did you hear about TPN?
I heard it from Dee. She was the one that expressed it to me and told me that, and she heard it from Southwest. So we have been working for the last 2 years on a program with Southwest so that we can have a pathway from a cadet through JetLynx and then on into Southwest. So we've built this relationship and have signed the agreements that we'll have a flow-through program with Southwest twofold for cadets that come in and start their career at CAE Semi-Flight or some aviation school, then come to us to get their flight time up, and then move on into Southwest. And it's a program where Southwest is involved from the beginning through their time here, and then as they go into the Southwest pilot pool or that environment. So they had expressed to us the information about your group, and we thought that would be an excellent opportunity to reach out to different organizations. In addition, we've also reached out to Women in Aviation and a few other national organizations as well.
Fantastic. Well, we're definitely going to come back to the Pathway program and all that good stuff. But first, because that's putting the cart before the horse, or the cart way in front of the horse. Let's talk about JetLynx itself. Let's talk about the history. How did JetLynx become JetLynx?
Sure. JetLynx started as a, started 20 years ago as a program with about four or five beach jets that had shares. So it was, you'd bought a share into the aircraft. Then through several years, they discovered that model wasn't as good as the model of doing charter and providing a membership program that somebody could buy one of three different level of cards into the membership, and then they would have a guaranteed aircraft available to them within 2 hours or 48 hours, depending on the program that they chose. So that model, the one where our passengers buy a membership to be part of the local JetLynx base, is the current model that has brought us to where we are, where we now have 19 different locations around the US. And these locations are sort of like an FBO, but we don't fuel and we don't cater to the general public. We just cater to our members who have bought a membership at JetLynx. And then most of these facilities are at the airport next to an FBO. And so the aircraft parks, you walk into the facility, you might have a meeting there, you relax, and then you get on your aircraft and you go on your trip. And then we bring you back to the base, we take care of your car, we facilitate anything you might need, from catering, customer service issues, dry cleaning, whatever you need. We have personnel at those local bases that will help with whatever you need.
Okay. Definitely a different model than what I'm used to.
Yeah,
that's for sure. What you say? How many members are there of JetLynx? If you can't even disclose that number,
you know, there's a lot. I don't exactly know the number, but I do know that with 100 airplanes,
wow,
we have to use external providers for extra lift. About 30 to 40% of our members fly on airplanes that are not JetLynx airplanes.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we might reach out to Georgia Jet to do a trip for us, or we might reach out to FlightWorks to do a trip for us, which we do about 30% of that.
Okay.
And then we also vet all of the other charter companies we use to make sure they're Wyvern, Argus, they don't have any issues with safety, mm-hmm. and their pilots meet the same standards that our pilots meet. And we continuously do audits on those individuals to make sure they meet our standards and that everything is done properly, and that our passengers, our members, are enjoying a level of service that we want to make sure occurs, because it's a selling point for us that we have professional pilots, safe pilots, well-groomed pilots, energetic individuals who are transporting individuals from point A to point B that might be afraid of flying. Maybe they don't like the bumps. So there's that aspect of it, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think, so one of the things that when I was taking a look deeper into JetLynx as we started to develop our relationship, one of the things that I saw that I thought was really interesting is, unlike a Part 121 carrier or even some Part 135 operators out there, you have a national operations center, but you also have local, as you were talking about, local teams that support the client. How, let's translate that. So obviously we know how they support the client locally with rental cars, dry cleaning, all that kind of stuff, which I think I need that in my own life, but that's a wholly different topic. Let's translate that over to the actual, the front-enders, the pilots. How does that local operation mesh with the national operation and how those two systems work together for the benefit of the pilot?
Sure, absolutely. So our National Operations Center is in Omaha, Nebraska, in a business park. It's not actually at the airport.
Okay.
At the National Operations Center, we have crewing, we have flight planning, we have performance charter. We have everything centrally located here because this is where our certificate office is. And so we report into the Lincoln FISDO. And so we have one certificate, one operating certificate that all of our bases across the U.S. operate under. Now, we'll hire a pilot. They'll come in for in-doc here at the NOC. They'll go to sim training. And then we've hired him to staff our base in Atlanta. So now they go to the base, they live in Atlanta, and they interact with the local customer service individuals. Our base president is there. And we also have a base chief pilot at that base that reports to me. And then all of the individual crew members in Atlanta, we have about 30 that report up through the local base chief pilot. The FAA only recognizes one chief pilot who's on the operating certificate, and that would be me. So I always joke with people that if they choose to do something that's inappropriate, they're going to get reprimanded by the FAA, and then I'm going to get reprimanded by the FAA because I allowed it to happen. Mm-hmm. So I always cautiously always keep an eye on operationally what are the different bases doing, and then make sure that they're not doing anything that would be contrary to the op specs, the FAA regulations, NTSB, DOT, all of that type of stuff.
That makes quite a bit of sense.
I was also going to say, we also have maintenance individuals at each of the bases, and we have a maintenance control here at the operations center that interacts with all of the local maintenance providers, and then also controls if an aircraft is green or red. Red meaning it's not going anywhere, and green is it's in service. So we keep a tight grip on those type of things.
Sure. With that said, how do you connect or keep in touch with the crews? Is it cell phone, iPad, combination of both, something else, smoke signals?
No smoke signals. Cell phone, video chat with the iPads. Everyone has a standard iPad with a certain amount of tools on it, which we learn how to use when you're in in-doc. Email is another way of communicating. Each of our aircraft have a sat phone, so we can always call them on the sat phone if needed. When we assign a trip to a pilot who might live in, let's say he lives in Nashville, and he's going to be going from Nashville to Dallas, our operations center in Omaha is scheduling that, is notifying the crew member, and the crew member is going to accept the trip before he shows up for duty. And so we know if an individual has not accepted the trip, we're going to reach out to him and say, hey, we assigned you a trip for tomorrow, but you haven't accepted it. Is there a reason why? That doesn't happen very often because everyone's really good at looking at their notifications to see what they're going to be doing. When is their day off, vacation? When do they have to go to training? All of those type of communications are done on the iPad. We use a system that knows exactly how somebody needs to be trained and what they need to be trained on. So it automatically warns you if you have some training coming up in next month, the month after, 6 months. So they have a very good view of what their schedule is for training and or trips.
Okay. All right. I wanted to, these are all questions that popped into my head as we were chatting there. How many crew members per base? Is it just all over the place? Is some base smaller, some bases larger? How does that work?
It's all over the place. Depending on the base, we might have a certain amount of airplanes. Nothing is uniform from how Sure. many airplanes are at a base. So with 100 different airplanes I put together, I'll show you here, a map of all the tail numbers and where they're located around the country. So it's a key that helps me identify the changes. So Atlanta has 15 airplanes. Nashville has 3. So Nashville would probably have about 9 people. Atlanta is probably going to have about 30. So it just depends on how many aircraft happen to be based there at that location.
And the way you just said that is something I wanted to touch on. Let's say I'm Nashville based, or we'll use Chicago land because I live closer to Chicago. So I'd like to drive to work, which is never going to happen in my current situation. Now, if all trips don't start in base from what I am taking, there might be, I may have a Chicago based trip that could be starting in Colorado Springs or something like that.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. And because I've seen JetLink guys and gals out in the system when I'm commuting to work, or I'm in Detroit, or I'm in wherever, whatever airport I'm in that day, and I'll see them and they're deadheading on my company's metal to get wherever they're going. I understand the basics of getting around the continental United States. Is there ever where it's time to deadhead them over to Paris or something like that? Do you guys do much international when it comes to that kind of stuff?
Yes. And we would, depending on the customer, if the customer wants to go nonstop from Atlanta to, let's say, Istanbul, or maybe it's Atlanta to Phuket. It's going to be more than 10 hours. Mm-hmm. Or do we put a third person on board the aircraft so we could do crew rest and fly more than the 10 hours? Because there's that opportunity as well. Or we will pre-position 2 new folks in Anchorage that will take over the aircraft and fly it to its final destination and then fly it back to Anchorage. 2 new people get on board the aircraft, and then it continues on to Atlanta. So we do move crews around to help facilitate the trips. But you're absolutely right, Adam. A lot of our members who might be a member in the Chicago base have spent 3 weeks out in Sun Valley, and now they want to get picked up in Sun Valley and brought back.
Sure.
So we'd look in our system and say, which aircraft is closest to Sun Valley and available? That might actually be an aircraft from Dallas. And then we would send the Dallas aircraft to Sun Valley to pick up that member trip that the member is from Chicago and take them back to Chicago. The aircraft will probably stay there until it picks up another trip that gets it back home to Dallas. So we have a group of planners that are looking at all the required trips and sort of weaving together a web of how to best satisfy those movements with all of our aircraft, not just the ones that are necessarily based at that location. Now, that being said, one of the things we like to tell our crew members is they're going to be at home more often than not, right? So you're going to drive to work. Maybe you're going to get there around 7 o'clock so you can fly somebody for about an hour. They're going to have a meeting somewhere, and then you're going to bring them back, and then you're going to go home and sleep in your bed. That happens more often than not. Mm-hmm. And so we have statistics for each base, each aircraft, and then we divide it into midsize, light jet, midsize, and heavy jet. And then the crew members have a visibility into the volume so they can see the statistics of, well, you know, they said I'd be at home 16 days out of the month or 20 days out of the month, and it's actually happening because that's what the statistics are showing us. So we're not like some companies that will keep that aircraft on the road all over the U.S. and float it to pick up trips. That's not the model we're into.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've known other people who've been in that situation before, and I can see where. I mean, the web that you just weave there, as you said, is not necessarily lacking complexity. It can be very complex. I always have that joke that I talk about with, well, I wouldn't call it a joke, it's real. I talk about with family members and friends, and even people I wouldn't consider necessarily friends. I let them know that when they're out traveling in the system, whether it's, it doesn't matter what they're going to do. But it normally is limited to Part 121 travel. I try to let them know that they're only one person on one airplane flying to one place. If they understood the complexity of what was happening in the national airspace system, just in the United States alone, just in Part 121 travel, their minds would explode because my brain, which is much smaller, can't pack any of it in. And they tend to say, well, you know, but I had this problem. And I go, I understand. But if you knew what was happening at a much higher level, it really is enough to make your brain hurt. And I had this conversation with somebody just the other day that one of the people at our company who works in network, I think is like an MIT postgraduate, whatever. And if it takes a postgrad MIT to run that system, then I have no hope of even remotely understanding it. So I don't even bother getting into it. What you said was just enough for my pea brain to go, yep, okay, got it. That's not easy to get. Moving on from that, because I think that's a good summation of the nuts and bolts of what JetLynx does from the pilot perspective. And there's a lot more that we could get into. In fact, Ari, Dee, and myself had a really nice conversation because of Jason Depew came up with this really kind of a cool idea of going to do a base visit or a tour and progressing through that. And since I live less than 90 miles away from a base, we're going to try to set it up where we go and get a video of what it's like day in the life kind of a thing down there, figure out something, which I think will be really beneficial to a lot of people to see, hey, this is what's going on here. With that said, let's get into what the pilots out there looking for that next phase of their career, whatever it might be. We'll talk kind of the cradle all the way to the end of whenever that might be. We'll get into the Southwest stuff too. But so let's say I come out and interview in Omaha tomorrow, and I'm successful in my interview. From that point forward, how long can I look? What's the timeline for me to go and start flying the line for JetLynx?
As soon as possible.
I love that. That's a good one.
So the normal process is you come in for an interview. You meet all of our requirements from a standpoint of technicality. You don't have any issues in your background because obviously we're going to do a background check. We're going to get training records. We're going to get drug program records as required. And if everything goes smoothly there, we would send you back to the base to have a meet and greet with the base president and even in some situations with the aircraft owners. Some of our aircraft owners want to meet their pilots. They want to feel comfortable with their pilots. So after that is completed, we would determine a job offer to be made. Compensation and everything would be written down in a formal job offer. And that offer would only come after passing a drug screening test for pre-employment. After that's done, we'll schedule you for in-doc training here at Omaha, and you would spend about 5 days here with us in the classroom. Before that time period, we'd also have some CBT training that we will give you. That's about 40 hours of that fun stuff. And then when you're here in Omaha, we're going to review all of the apps that you're going to use to do flight planning, runway analysis, maintenance log entries, tracking if the aircraft is up or down. You'll know all of that stuff because that is a requirement, is the flight planning and fuel planning and weather planning. Our pilots do all of that. Then, depending if you're current and qualified in an aircraft, let's say you came to us and you already have a type in a beach jet. The FAA does require us to send you to our program, which is administered by Flight Safety or CAE Semi-Flight. So we design the training program, we give it to them, they administer it for us, and then we send you there. Recurrent training is usually about a week, 7 days. And then if it's a new type, we're going to send you to, sorry, my phone's ringing.
No worries. You're a busy man.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's only rang once so far.
If you have to go in for the type, it's usually most aircraft are running 3 to 4 weeks, right? A G650 is going to be about a month. The smaller aircraft are probably going to be 3 weeks. And the programs are set up for 1 day off every week when you're in training. And depending on the aircraft you're going to, we might send you to Savannah for that aircraft, or Wichita for that aircraft, or Long Beach for that aircraft, or Wilmington, because Flight Safety has so many different locations. We're looking at every location to see where the availability of that slot's going to be so that we can get you qualified as soon as possible. So once you come out of training, we're going to give you some time off to decompress. And as I said earlier, you know, our training program is set up to say, okay, the traditional time involved in this training event is going to be 5 sim rides. And I always tell people, if you need more time in the sim, you let me know. We are paying Flight Safety to get you qualified. If we have to do additional training, we're open to that. And so a lot of times we'll have that conversation. I always tell people, do an evaluation. Instructors, you tell me if they're not progressing normally, and if they're not, then what do we need to do to help them progress? Because obviously most people that come to us already have an ATP. Now, if they don't, that's not a problem. When they go in for that training on the aircraft, we will get them the ATP. The ATP ride is the same as a type ride. I think there's one additional approach to be made, but we do that. Then when you're done with training and you've got all of our background checks done, we're going to have you fly with a senior captain and do IOE flying. So you're going to get some initial operating experience with the senior captain. Now, you'll have passengers, but you will be under the supervision of a senior individual who's going to be monitoring your progress. And then depending on how you progress and your duty assignment, we will give you a line check, which is a route check. And then that allows us to say you're now a captain for Jetlinx and you're fully qualified to fly the aircraft. So then you're online and you're operating in our environment. And, you know, month to month, you're picking your days off for the next month. You're scheduling your PTO. We're scheduling your training. So it's a groove that you get into. Mm-hmm. We do try to look at how much time away from home are you. We have statistics that will tell us if you're away from home for more than 7 days, we need to start looking at getting you a bonus day off or getting you back home, swapping you out with one other individual. Now, I earlier said that most of our pilots are assigned to an aircraft. However, I have a pool of pilots who are not assigned to an aircraft. It's about 20 individuals that are qualified on most of our aircraft that we can use as filler or also providing days off and PTO coverage. So we have that buffer that allows us to manage the individuals who maybe their aircraft is flying a lot this month and we need to get them some rest or what have you. The last thing we want to do is any type of fatigue issues. We do have a fatigue management system that is built into our flight scheduling tool. So we can run a fatigue assessment on every trip, every pilot, based on the information that we've put in there for time of day of departure, how long is the flying going to be, how many days is it scheduled for, what's the weather look like, all of those type of things.
Wow, that was exactly what I was looking for. And I didn't even have to say anything, which I know a lot of people really enjoyed not hearing me talk for that period. Another piece that I wanted to ask, of course, got to get into what the crew likes. So what the crew members love, talk about benefits and money. As far as starting pay, at a lot of airlines, in-doc and training are paid differently all over the board, right? I know friends of mine at American, they get paid X amount of hours. It's actually a pretty high number, hours right off the bat, first year pay. It is totally different at other airlines. How do you at JetLinks pay from training then out on the line? Is it the hourly standard that so many are here with the hourly pay rate? Is it salary based? Can you delve into that? And then what are some of the benefits that maybe the crew members out there would like to hear?
Sure, absolutely. And I can use an example of a new hire that we recently hired.
So, perfect.
You get a salary, and that salary starts the day that you come to in-doc. Now, I did talk about the CBT training that happens before you come to in-doc. It's about 40 hours. We're going to pay you an hourly rate for that. Then when you come to in-doc, your first day of in-doc, your salary starts. An average salary for a new pilot on a beach jet, which is a light aircraft, is about $100,000, which I think is in my view, from all the statistics I've seen from ProPilot and other organizations that sort of do an assessment, it's not a bad salary. It's actually pretty good. So you would start with the full-time salary. You get medical, dental, vision, standard medical coverage for you and your family. We also have a 401k that we match 100%. Match up to 6% of your salary. So that's there for retirement. We cover your FA medical, and then we cover your uniform. So it's a black tie, shirt, several shirts. We give you a company credit card, and we tell you, hey, get a few shirts, get a few pants, tie, epaulets, and just use a credit card and explain what you're using it for. And then when you're on the road, we cover food, we cover getting you to where you need to go, and we cover your hotel. What we don't cover is probably if you're on a layover and you want to go see a movie, we're not going to cover the movie cost. But short of that, we cover everything. So it's having this job doesn't cost you anything. It shouldn't cost you anything. We also give you a cell phone allowance every month. So that way, when we call, you answer, and there's not an issue with that. So those are some of the things people enjoy. I think people like the fact that you never really know where you're going until you get a trip assignment. In the airlines, there's about 500 airports that most airliners go into and commuters. Mm-hmm. In our world, we have over 5,000 airports that we can go to. Now, if you're flying a G650, you're not going to Aspen because it's not allowed there. The wingspan is too large. But short of that, you're going everywhere else.
Yeah. I think that's one of my favorite parts about sitting reserve is, I have a chance of not going to work. I also have a chance of going somewhere that I normally don't get to go to because my seniority doesn't afford it. However, that is still a very limited number of places, and sometimes I wouldn't mind, and I do miss the days of flying into Traverse City, or I think I went somewhere for the first time. I think it was like Pierre or something like that. So, or no, it was Bismarck, and I'd never been to Bismarck, and I thought, well, this is kind of cool. Yeah, I'd never get to go there, and that is something I miss a little bit with the military, is some of the kind of bizarre places that I would go into. Back in my younger days. So that is something that to me, I enjoyed it a lot. And I do have that kind of itch to get into some of those different locations.
I was just going to reference Kabul and Bagram and Mazar-e Sharif and Kandahar and Jalalabad as places that you've been to.
Yeah, we'll skip most of those are, I'm fine. You know what? I did that. That was fine. But I will say flying into the Bamiyan Valley, as a And I got to go on the tank. Got to go on one of my stories as a tanker guy, as a flight level 350 dude, and having no experience low to the ground and never having experience with props really, except for flying pistons. And I remember the first time I looked at a Beech 1900, I go, why the hell does this thing have six throttles? It doesn't make any sense. And I remember I get over to Afghanistan flying for Flightworks, our former company, and it was a short time in, maybe 2.5 weeks, not even. I got to go fly into the Bamiyan Valley. And the Bamiyan Valley, for those of you who don't know, is a really beautiful part of Afghanistan where it's very green. So it's unlike any other rural areas that you see going over. For those of you military guys who've flown over there, over the Bagram area and Kandahar, where it's kind of more arid, Bamiyan Valley is not like that at all. And there I am going, flying up the valley with, I think it might have been Brad that day. And he's like, okay, so we're going to go in and we're going to fly up this road. And it's a road, but it's also the runway. We'll overfly it and you're going to scare the kids and the people off of it and the sheep or whatever. And then we're going to pull like a closed pattern. We're going to come around and we're going to go. And for those of you who can't see, I'm doing hand flying, dagger flying here around this little hill. And then we'll land on the road. And then you'll land on the road. And as you roll out, you have to turn. So it's like a big, giant, high-speed turnoff. And I look at him. I go, what are you talking about, man? That's, I don't do that kind of stuff. He goes, oh, you do now. And it was awesome. It was one of my favorite. It's probably my favorite place I've ever got to land at. And there was some really cool. Afghanistan is not the garden spot of the world as far as places to stay, but as far as some of the cooler landings and scenery, seeing things that I'll never get to see again in my life, hopefully, knock on wood. I'm glad I did it. Glad I don't have to do it again, kind of a thing. That was super unique, especially for a guy like me, not a C-130 guy, not somebody with that kind of experience. And I know that those experiences, now I don't expect Jetlinx is flying into Jalalabad anytime soon. And if
we are not,
no, and I'm sure most of your clients don't want to go to Jalalabad either, which by the way, they do have awesome bread. So for those of you who do want to go there, just make sure you get the Jalala bread, as we like to call it. But that unique experience of flying into some of these smaller, less traveled to destinations, for me, that was something I always really, really enjoyed. And I do miss it, quite a bit, because I don't get that with what I'm doing now. Not to say I don't like what I'm doing now, but I do miss that, those smaller outstations, if you will, or just smaller cities. Living and growing up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we're not one of the huge markets. So I do love that, seeing smaller cities. I always find stuff that I find to be more interesting and unique. I feel sometimes in a bigger city, I'm just like, well, there's so much to do. I'll just head to the local bar, because that's the easiest thing for me to do.
And spoken like a true pilot.
Yeah, I don't get overwhelmed there. There's no overwhelmingness at the bar. So I think that's really something that I could see being of interest to people. And how does that gel with base seniority? So if I got hired tomorrow at the interview, base seniority-wise, how do I get Chicago or somewhere that I want to be based? How does that unfold?
Two ways. Most of our positions are identified with a base. So okay. If you're looking on Climb 2350 or BizJet Jobs or LinkedIn, most jobs are associated with a base. So you'd pick whatever base you want to go to, and you would interview for that specific position. The floater position that I mentioned earlier, the group of 20 people that I have as the fill-ins, they can live wherever they want. We just ask that they live near a major airport so we can airline them to where they need to go.
Oh, okay.
And you know, earlier I talked about all the great things that pilots like. There is a few things that pilots don't like that are part of the job.
Get out of here. Come on.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, you know, it's a situation like, let's say you got hired tomorrow and I was doing the interviewing and I offered you the job. I would counsel you and I'd say, you need to check with your family and you need to review this to make sure this kind of job fits in with the family unit that you might have, because if you're going to be on call, you might get called to go do a trip and now you can't go to the soccer game that you thought you were going to go to yesterday because the trip popped up today and you got a 6-hour notice that you're going to be gone. And for some people, that's difficult. And I completely realize that. And so that's why I always tell people, you need to review what this job is with your family to make sure they're okay with it. Because I have seen many situations where somebody is excited with the salary, they like the airplane, they're going to be flying a G450, and then they realize that that G450 is going to be going to Europe a lot, mm-hmm. and they're gone for 10 days straight on a European tour, and all of a sudden, they're not happy anymore. And it's one of those things that as much transparency as I can provide them, and everyone here at JetLinx wants to provide them so they know what they're getting into. It is something that I strive because it is hard work. You know, there's times you're going to go to work at, show up at 3 o'clock in the morning for a 4:30 departure out of an airport that doesn't have a control tower.
Yeah.
Now what do you do? Yeah. Or, you know, you've got ice on the runway and now you've got to make a self-determination. Is it safe or not? So there's a lot of interesting things that can really provide a level of stress that you wouldn't normally have in a different environment like a scheduled air carrier. So I always try to be very upfront with people that it is a job. It is not a country club where you're going to be enjoying a lot of time laying around a pool. So I try to be upfront with people that says, hey, we're going to take care of you and we're going to ask you to do a job and we're going to give you all the tools you need. And there will be situations where you're going to get stressed out and you're going to be complaining to somebody. And so for instance, I get a lot of feedback that, well, I was talking to crewing and they told me I needed to do X. And I'm like, you don't report to crewing. If you don't feel comfortable doing it, you don't do it. Call the safety person or call your base chief pilot or call me. But, you know, if you're going to complain to somebody and they don't have any responsibility for saying, oh, okay, that's okay, don't do that. It's sort of like, okay, let me direct who can help you.
Sure. As a military guy going into the part or the civilian flying world, as a professional, one of the things that I think is challenging is who do I utilize to help me in my decision-making process? Not only in the decision-making process of the day-to-day or going to fly, but outside of that, in the more, I don't know what you want to call it, the big picture view. And something that we were talking about as we were discussing beforehand, and we're going to veer off for a second here, is that ability, and we're going to talk about it again too, and it'll be more of a one-word answer, but here I want you to expound on a little bit, Ari, is that thing that you find to be one of the items in your career where you really believe that all of us, kind of no matter age or experience level, be damned, we should all have a mentor. And that yes. mentor, yeah. It sounds like to me, whether it's somebody, I've had my mentors, and I also have them outside of just the aviation realm, where it's somebody who knows something that I know nothing about that can help me walk down the path. And my wife is one of those types of mentor, and something totally different other than aviation. Certain other friends and family members. Can you kind of delve into that a little bit on
sure.
what you think that you're looking for in a mentor for yourself, and then what you like to mentor other folks on being somebody that's been in the industry for a while?
Sure. So I have a set of mentors that I use that are individuals that are not like me. They're from different backgrounds, different type of work, different ethnic groups. So it's a definite process of selecting people that aren't going to agree with everything I want. So that if I'm asking them, hey, what do you think? They're not thinking exactly like me. So they're giving me feedback that is going to be different, because if if all of my mentors were exactly like me, I'm going to get the answer I want every time. That's not good. So in my view, I make a selection of a mentor that I can go to, and I'm fairly confident I'm going to get an objective view of what perhaps I need to consider before making a decision. It's sort of a situation where you go to a mentor, they're asking you a whole lot of questions about the situation. And so you're explaining, well, if I take that job, I get this much time off, I get this compensation. And then they're like, well, how long are you going to be away from home? And is that okay with your family? Things of that nature. So I also have some mentors that I go to if it's a question about, you know, I've been asked to have positions, and I've had many chief pilot positions, and it's and a DO position and so on. So when you're in a position of responsibility in those areas, you're dealing a lot with senior management at that company. So there are certain things that senior management might ask you to do, and now you have to be able to say, no, we can't do that. It's not safe. It's not proper. It's not legal. So there's a lot of individuals that I use to determine when to push and when not to push, and how to do that in a professional way so no one's offended. And one of the things that I did not have when I first started my career was a mentor that had knowledge of aviation and could express to me that, well, you know, you should get your CFI first, you should do this, and then maybe some cargo, collect your flight time, then go to this airline or company and get that experience. And then, you know, if your ultimate goal is to fly a G650, here's the path that you need to take to get there, or one of the paths, right? There's many ways to get there. What you don't want to do is do things that are going to prevent you from getting to that ultimate goal. A DUI in our business is bad. Don't do that. Drugs, bad. Don't do that. Just say no. Those are things that impact. They're not showstoppers, but they do impact your ability to get to where you want to be at a certain time frame.
Sure.
The other thing that I always tell people is make sure that your career decisions are made by you and your family, and that you don't make them without involving them, because if you do, it's always going to be a very difficult situation that you'll find yourself in ultimately.
Absolutely. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And that goes across the board, I think.
Yep.
On that same note, now being, you're in a different position than let's say somebody like myself, I've got a lot of experience. I've been around for a while, but in the civilian side, I've only got about 7 years of flying aviation business work under my belt. So I know how to do what I've done, but I don't know much outside of that world, except from what I perceive. How do you view yourself as a mentor to younger pilots? And what are the, besides, because I take this tact, I'm learning it, I'm learning it daily with my family, is the best way to deliver a message is to provide the information. And just like you said, transparency, show people, whether it's through action or word. Action obviously is better than word if you can do it through that. Just to show them, hey, these opportunities are out there. And that is the only way I know how to mentor people in my family, because I've realized that if you try to tell them to do something, or this is the best option, that they routinely, if not always, pick the opposite direction because you said it. How do you tie that in with your mentorship as a chief pilot? That can be a very challenging position, sometimes unapproachable, even no matter how approachable you make yourself, it's, I don't want to get in trouble. How do you marry those up as a mentor who's been around in now a position of responsibility to talk to, let's say, a brand new 25, 30 year old pilot who is just getting off a military contract, or is just coming out of school from Embry-Riddle and has got the required hours, which we'll talk about in a minute here. How do you marry those up, being in a position of responsibility, but also open-minded to help them get there, get them where they want to be as soon as they can get there.
Sure, sure. So one thing I'm very, very cognizant of is the fact that I fill a role that can be intimidating at times. And that role for me is multifaceted. There's the role of I'm the chief pilot and I need to pass judgment. There's the role I'm a pilot and I'm going to be flying with a coworker. I don't mix the two together. If I'm flying with you and we're doing a trip from point A to point B, one of us is the assigned PIC and one of us is the assigned SIC. And I normally do the SIC duty so that I can participate and not get rusty on the box or anything of that nature. Because I often tell people, I'm the chief pilot. I'm not the best pilot. I'm probably the worst pilot. I don't fly that often. So you better watch out. So it's a situation that you can offer. And then the mentor part of it, a lot of people will ask me, hey, what do you think about this company or that company? And I always have a set of rules that if a company is offering you a deal, make sure they write it down. Because in the aviation world, outside of the airline world, Part 91, 135, 125, all those others, we have a lot of individuals that are always trying to make a killing on some deal. And they say, hey, you know, we're going to get a G450, but you're going to start off on this beach jet. And in 3 months, you'll go to the G450. And, you know, it's word of mouth and it never shows up. So I always tell people that if you're looking at an employer or a position or a job, and if they're not willing to document what those benefits are and only do it verbally, that's for me a thing that you need to be very cautious of. And I always tell people, okay, yeah, be very cautious of that. And then, you know, if you're going to go take a job somewhere, ask the right questions. You know, do they have any enforcement actions on their certificate? Have they recently changed their certificate to a DBA to hide a business name that has done something that isn't very good? So doing all of your research so you don't get into a situation where, you know, the company's going out of business because they weren't funded properly. The owner sold the airplane and was planning to sell it, but hired you and never told you that. You know, so there's a lot of research that you want to do to make sure you're getting involved with the right company and not a company that's trying to do it on the cheap. You know, a lot of times companies will talk about their safety management program, which is nothing more than a declaration for some companies from the CEO. Mm-hmm. We do have a ASAP program, which mimics the airline's ASAP program. We have an LOA from the FAA that allows our pilots to submit the safety report and then resolve it in a non-punitive fashion.
I think that the way you just described how you're opening up and having folks, the way, first of all, you talked about flying with people as the SIC. Hey, I'm the rusty one. I know that feeling sometimes as well. But the ability to say, hey, although I am your chief pilot, if you're looking, like you just talked about, I'm looking at moving from company A to B, it's something that might benefit my family a little bit better. Do your research first. I think just that conversation is open mentorship. Telling people you want to discuss safety, that's open mentorship. That's stuff that I try to find in the mentors that I've taken. I want to hear not only how the good things they've done, but the good things don't resonate a lot of times. It's the things that they might could have done better. And when they screwed up is what I go, okay, you know what? They may have seen it as a failure or a screw up, but I actually see it as a big success because they learned something and look what they did after that. Look what I can model myself after. And I think that kind of open mentorship is really critical. And when you were talking about other companies, let's jump right into the Southwest link between JetLinks. Oh, they're a little pun. The link between JetLinks and Southwest. How does that look? What is that? Adam gets hired tomorrow. What does that look like for me?
It looks like three different things. Okay. And I'll review each of those individually. Adam, you get hired tomorrow. You're going to enjoy the ability to fly on Southwest in a open seat in their main cabin. So we have, it's not a true jump seat yet because we're not in CAS. As soon as we're in CAS, it will be a jump seat program for Southwest. So that's one thing that you can enjoy right off the bat. The other thing you can enjoy right off the bat is being in good standing with us. And then after a year of employment or two, we are provided with a certain amount of passes to their biannual interviews / get to know Southwest sessions that they have. So we will give those to our employees that wish to continue or learn more about Southwest or continue their career with Southwest. Now, the other situation begins more in the cadet program. Let's say you're going to go get your private pilot's license, your commercial, your instrument, your ATP, and you're going to go to a CAE cadet program. You can enter that program with a view of ultimately ending up at Southwest. They will put you into a program where they're going to evaluate you before you even start your flight training. So that way there is a pathway to Southwest from start to finish. So you would start with a cadet program. You would end up with about 1,500 hours. And then you would come to JetLinks and you would work with us for at least 3 years and be in good standing. And during that whole 3 years, you're being mentored by an individual from Southwest. We will adopt their standards to make sure we're doing it and getting you up to speed so that when you're done at JetLinks, you're now a product that can move into Southwest with minimal difficulty. And so there's that pathway program that we've established with Southwest. So there's three major things. It's the pathway for the new pilot. It is the existing pilot that might get the invite to go to one of their hiring sessions, and then it's the jump seat program that we have.
Very unique and creative ways that all of these companies are starting to look at how to fill the seats. I think it's outstanding. It's good for the industry. Oh, go for it, Ari.
There's one more.
Fire it up, man.
Very important.
Do it.
One of the other items we've done, and we've actually interviewed two Southwest pilot employees. Okay, one was a pilot. I believe the other one was a dispatcher. So we have a pilot retiring out of the 121 world at 65. They interviewed with us, and they'll be retiring in February, and they want to fly for us out of the Atlanta area. So the retirement flow, reverse flow, if you will, is in the works, as well as there is a dispatcher for Southwest that has interviewed to come and work with us. He already has his ATP, so he wants to come to us to get flight time, so that way he can then go back to Southwest.
I think that's awesome. In fact, I can think of four folks just off the top of my head that this program would just benefit, who are wanting to accelerate aviation from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. I think our enlisted folks out there who are listening, especially those in the aviation career field who already have flown, i.e. loadmaster, boom operator, flight engineer, flying crew chief, mechanic, or air battle manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think those folks who have the ability to go and who already have a degree or who have some flight time under their belt or are going to get licensed, this program is something that they could probably hammer out. They could get that initial phase done to get on with company like JetLinks, and they're already semi-polished in that they've already been through some of those life experiences that companies are really looking for, especially when you're dealing with high value clients type folks who can be a little more particular than others than in their travel demeanor, which is not to say, you know,
that's nicely put.
It is. Hey, I'll tell you what, the worst group on the planet of travelers is airline pilots. We expect to be catered to at a level that's beyond anything that we can ever get. And we have to realize that sometimes we're just labor, and I'm fine with that. It's just, we have to realize it sometimes. I think the second group, and this is the group that I am very passionate about figuring out what I can do as a member of TPN and somebody who's at the, I guess, top of the hierarchy, I suppose, is helping out the reverse retiree. The reverse mortgage.
Yeah.
The reverse retiree. There's a lot of folks who, and it's not, some folks it's money related, but not many of them it's money related. It's that they want to still work. They still want to fly. They're hitting the end and they're going, oh man, I don't want to give this up yet. This is too much fun. I'm enjoying my career. I've just kind of hit my stride. I think there's more of those than I thought there were, more folks like that. And I think that this podcast and us, the ability to, for us to get the word out there, because I do know of folks right now who are looking for jobs in the next 6 months for something like this. And they're already set to go. I mean, this is kind of a plug and play situation where they just have to go through training and they're back out on the line and they're doing something. They're back in the uniform and they're going at it. So hopefully this word will get out to them. And what a nice supplemental income for their retirement, number one. And number two, they can go out and do something different to finish off their yeah. already pretty laudable career.
The other thing I'd like to add, Adam, mm-hmm. is in the retirement community, there's some individuals that want to have a full schedule. There's some people that only want to fly 5 days a month, or maybe they only want to fly 6 days a month. Maybe they want to be a part-time person. Mm-hmm. So we have some situations where a pilot is paid by the day that we use them. They're considered full time, but they're not always available to us. And so we'll say, hey, we're going to pay for your training. We'll get you up to speed. We'll get you qualified. But okay, for this aircraft, we'd like you to at least commit to 6 days a month.
Sure.
And then if there's more than that, we'll let you know. If there's not more than that, no foul.
Keeping so your foot, there's those, foot in the door. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think for a lot of folks out there, I mean, military retirees who finish out at 45, 46 years old and don't want to start commuting to New York and want to live in a certain place, who have a spouse who they're necessarily or not necessarily, but following their spouse around, maybe they have a giant career upgrade from where they were. How many times have you heard this from military pilots who are out there where the wife or the husband, who is the spouse of the pilot, was doing something because the military career was taking them to places where they necessarily couldn't do what they wanted to do or needed right. to do for their career. And then that final move was up to them and they got the job that is now going to be the majority breadwinner or the job that they've wanted to do. And now we're supporting them. I think there's something to that. And the ability for somebody who's been at the end of their military career, who doesn't necessarily need the full-time pay benefit, whatever, and just still wants to be foot in the door flying or have that and be a real estate agent and be home with the kids mm-hmm. or whatever the case is and I think the opportunities out there, these folks just don't know about them. That was my third piece, was the military retiree, not necessarily the military, folk who's coming up at the end of their contract. They're a different ball of wax kind of altogether, but the military retiree, more often than not, I see them having, as time has grown, I remember when I was younger, it was airlines. The airlines weren't hiring, but it was everybody wanted to go to the airlines because of a pay. And that was the only thing we kind of ever heard about, if we ever even heard about that on the military side. But now I think there's been this tectonic shift after 9/11, after the down years, after all the other stuff that's happened over the last 15 to 20 years, that quality of life is something that's so important to so many people. It's the driver for everything. How much money do you really need? And some people, it's, I need more than that. How much money do you need? Add $1 and then that's what I need. Other people, it's, I've got the money situations figured out. You know, we're in the FIRE method, as Jason Depew uses in his book, or Mr. Money Mustache, or any of those kind of things, the Dave Ramsey stuff. And the one thing that none of us can get back is time, and that's what they want. And so there's some unique options out there for that. And then the last piece, and this one is a growing market. We've noticed it at the network. I've noticed it just on trips, is there's a lot of flight attendants who want to move from the back end to the front end of the airplane. And they are uniquely qualified because they already know how to do customer engagement. the lion's share of them. There's some that are still working on that, to say it, put it nicely. But there's a lot that are young who have a college degree, who got into the travel side of being a flight attendant and love being a part of that industry, but they want to move to the front seat and they want to fly the airplane and they want all the responsibility and the rigors that come with that because they think it's maybe more glamorous, which that's not the case. But there's so much more up there that they're interested in. And I think here's another program that they can look at and take advantage of. And the reason I've thought about this before, but when you said the dispatcher from Southwest, I said, wow, that's a great example. But that's somebody who's already one step closer anyways because of their knowledge base. Flight attendant, although in the air, doesn't have that same knowledge base of what's going on up front. Some of the greatest flight attendants I've ever flown with, when they come up for a bathroom break for the pilots, they ask questions. And every now and again, you'll get a CFII who's asking real questions where you're going, time out. I got to look that up because it's been years since I've thought of something like that. So
yeah,
I think that flow program and that pathway program is a great way to introduce JetLinks to the community, knowing that this might not be the place that you use to move on to the next thing. This may be the last place you ever work because you enjoy what JetLinks can give you as opposed to what the next place can give you. Wrapping up a lot of this here, we're going to get into one admin thing at the very end, but I wanted to ask you the unique qualities of JetLinks. Is there one thing that stands out? And this is, we'll go into, this is our first memory item. So we have this thing called memory item questions that we like to ask. It's a play on the idea of boldface for military, memory items for the civilian side, and just remembering something from this podcast. What is the one thing that you want everybody who listens to this podcast to take away about JetLinks?
I would say that the one thing would be the amount of opportunities, different opportunities, structured, unstructured, that we can offer. The other thing that I wanted to also share is a thing that we call core values. Put that up there. And the core values are selflessness, dedication, enthusiasm, integrity, and compassion. And we give this to each and every one of our employees. They put it on their right behind their ID. And these are things that we train them on that they need to operate with these core values at the top of their engagement with customers, colleagues, coworkers, everyone that they come in contact with. That we want those core values demonstrated, and that, you know, we care about our employees. I think that's a big one as well. I mean, we've had several situations where, you know, we've had pilots who are stressed because their wife just had a baby and she's going through a difficult time with postpartum depression. And what can we do to make sure he's at home to take care of his wife? There are situations where people have medical issues, and how can we work with them to resolve those issues? So the compassion part of what we do for our employees is something that I would like everyone to remember. And some of our employees find that odd because they've never found that anywhere else. And so when you tell them, hey, if you got an issue, we've got employee assistance program, we'll work with you. And they're like, you're not going to fire me? And I said, no, we've invested way too much. we want to see a return on our investment. And we want to make sure that, you know, everyone knows that we're here to invest in our employees and not just use them. And once they're spent, they leave and they didn't get anything out of it other than working to the bone.
Yeah. That's I think that's a pretty good one thing they should know about JetLinks is that you do have core values, you abide by them, and those unique opportunities combined with those core values are make it a very unique environment in which to operate. I like that as memory item number one. Back to the admin piece. This is the last admin piece that we'll talk about. This is just for the folks out there. So we kind of talked about that pathway program, and that can get there's all sorts of stuff we could get into there, and we don't really have the time to go any longer. Let's talk about basic requirements. So for the folks out there who are looking, who are doing the standard interview, get hired, come to INDOC, start training, what are the minimums, and then what do you, what would you say is competitive?
So minimums for a PIC, 3,000 hours total time, and 200 hours in that aircraft. For instance, if you're going to be flying a Hawker and you want to come off the street and be a PIC, we're going to look for you to have at least 250 hours of PIC time in that aircraft with a total time of 3,000 hours. For the SIC, it's 1,500 hours, no time in type. You don't have to have the ATP. We're going to give that to you when we do the first type rating. We've had a situation where we use Argus and Wyvern for some of our standards, and we have found that we have a lot of people that come to us that have a lot of experience in different aircraft, but not the one that we want them to fly. And so we have gone to those standard organizations and presented the individual to say, hey, this individual has 8,000 hours total time. He's flown tankers in the military, and we want him to fly the beach jet. We want to make him a PIC. Will you sign off on it? And in most situations where we look at the whole person and the breadth of experience of the whole person to get them qualified and approved for a position with us, we've been very successful in doing that. So those are the minimum standards. Obviously, we want you to have a great background check record. You're going to do a fingerprint CHRC background check. So there's things in your background that if they are present would prevent us from hiring you. So those are not secrets. We tell you right up front what they are, and we ask you. We also ask, you know, how's your training been in the past? Have you failed any check rides? In some situations, if you can explain the situation of the failed check ride, we would say, oh, okay, that's not that big of a deal. Or if that's a concern to us, we'll figure something out. In most situations, it's not a big deal unless you've failed every check ride you've ever done. That's a big deal. But it's looking at that individual as an individual and seeing how best do they fit into our organization. Mm-hmm. If it's a situation that we have a concern that, okay, well, we'll hire you as an SIC and then we're going to monitor and see how you do, we're fine with that as well. It's a situation that's worth reaching out to us and saying, hey, here's my current background and here's where I'd like to be. And how could that fit in with us? And one other thing that we're also looking at in the pathway program that I spoke about with Southwest, and we are working with Southwest on this, is funding for training. The traditional student loan process is very cumbersome, and to become a pilot is very costly. And so what mechanisms do we have that could help cover the cost of training and get more individuals into this industry? And so we are working on, with several different financial institutions, a mechanism to make that happen. Because it's sort of funny that if you look at the cost of training is very high at the beginning of your career, where your salary is very low. And then at the end of your career, your salary is really high and training is very low. Mm-hmm. So it's like these two lines that meet in the middle somewhere. And if we could balance that out somehow and get more people into the industry and not have financial cost be a roadblock.
Yeah.
So more to come on that.
That's awesome. I think a lot of us are really looking forward to hearing about that mitigation, not only from you, but from across the board. But JetLinks, let's see JetLinks lead the way, and that will be even better for everybody at TPN and JetLinks. And you'll have the ability to tell the world that, hey, we've done it right, and now you can take our model. Getting to the memory items, on memory item number two, What would you have told young Ari when he first started out in this whole crazy industry that he must do? And we already talked about it, so we can just the one-liner right there. Will
be the one-liner would be patient. It takes time. Be patient.
I love it. Be patient. And it does take time. I've started to adopt that over my, as I get older. What's your favorite part of the industry and what's your least favorite part?
My favorite part is the pace of the work and the discovery of going somewhere new. I recently had the opportunity to go to fly myself and the passengers and the other crew member to Phuket in Thailand. The other individual was a brand new SIC who had never been over water or international. And, you know, we're halfway over Russia somewhere and he's still back in Anchorage. Wondering what the hell's going on?
Yeah, it happens to the best of us, right?
So yeah, that's the fun part of it. Mm-hmm. The part that I don't like a lot or isn't the most enjoyable to me is counseling individuals that perhaps have a challenge in the cockpit and trying to communicate with them in a way that is non-threatening, but is positive for improvement in a area or a different area. It's never fun to get feedback that isn't 100% positive, but I'm the type of individual that is going to give you that feedback in a very conscientious manner and be understanding that there's probably a different reason why you're not focused on your job, and what is that, and what can we do to help that? That tends to be the one area that sometimes, you know, no one wants to have that conversation, so I'm usually the one that does it, because as the chief pilot, the buck stops here.
Yeah, it falls on you, whether you like it or not. And that,
yeah.
Your own memory item, your last parting shot, what do you want to tell the world?
Aviation is the best career field that I have ever been in. Now, I did construction to pay for college. Construction wasn't for me, but that's what I had to do to pay for flight training. I've worked at a bank. I've worked at a refrigeration shop. I had several different newspaper routes, all in an effort to pay for flight training. So I've had that experience, and I'm like, okay, aviation's the best career field that, for me, I've enjoyed. And I think everyone else would too.
Yeah, I think if you're motivated to do it and you do it smartly, I mean, back to that mentorship piece and being patient, you kind of put that all together. It can be one amazingly rewarding career field, and it doesn't matter what you choose it to be. It's a choose your own adventure. There are guys who are bush pilots in Alaska, crop dusters across Nebraska, airline pilots in New York, military guys who retire at 4 stars in the Pentagon, and gals. There's folks who fly for Jetlinx, and there's GA CFIs out there who that's what they're doing right now. And every one of them will tell you that it's the best and worst job they've ever had, no matter what job it really is. So I think when you put all those things together, it is one hell of a career field. It's something that we both enjoy. And Ari and I both talked about that before we started. Finally, Ari, how can these wonderful folks from the network get a hold of you? And we'll put that in the show notes as well. Also, where should they submit their resume if they're interested in becoming part of the Jetlinx team? So let's go over where they can get a hold of you and then also where they can submit.
So they can get hold of me at my email address, which is ari.sarmento@jetlinks.com. Or they can text me at 404-432-2935. Or they can go to a web link to submit and look over open positions here at Jetlinx. It's a www.jetlinks, that's JETLINX.com/careers. CAREERS. Steve, I put that there.
Awesome. That'll work for, and we'll have that in the show notes and on the YouTube channel as well. Ari, thank you again so much for joining us. It's been a whirlwind tour of JetLinks. We got through that quickly. There's a lot more that we could discuss, but I think this is a really great place for people to get their first toe in the water and understanding what JetLinks is all about. I think that Jason or I hopefully will be joining one of the JetLinks local teams here in the next, after the holidays are over, to kind of go do a, as we like to call it, ride along. That's the term we're using to go check out what's going on at the local level. I think that'll be a lot of fun for one of us, and hopefully we'll have a lot of great insights for our network out there. And I want to thank everybody on the network just for tuning in. This is a great opportunity for those of you looking for the last job of your career, the first job of your career, or somewhere in between. I know that someday I might be in the position where I might need something to have a little bit of supplemental income for what I want to do, and I might not be working at the airline anymore. Hopefully, I might have an opportunity and have the resume that's competitive at JetLinks. They might say you're too old, too stupid, and you don't look all that great. So off you go. But we'll wait until that point. Until then, or until the next time that you hear my wonderful voice, keep flying safe and tune in as much as you can to the network to keep updated with all things JetLinks and all of our other wonderful sponsors out there. Again, Ari, thank you very much.
Hope
to talk to you soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ari Sarmento. And if you're interested in joining the JetLinks family, go ahead and give Ari a shout. You can reach him via email at ari.sarmento@jetlinks.com. That's ari.sarmento@jetlinks.com. Give him a call at 404-432-2935 or go to the web and find him at jetlinks.com/careers. Once again, thank you so much for listening. We hope you subscribe. If you got questions for Matt or I, hit us up at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org. Find us on Facebook or Instagram. And of course, as always, keep the shiny side up and the greasy side down. Fly safe, everybody.